Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
This is Harvey Wasserman back for another hour in the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are going to be talking today, after hearing the beautiful Dar Williams and the wonderful Pete Seeger and David Byrne singing the Solartopia song. We're going to be talking today about stolen elections once again. And we got a pretty in-depth view of it. We have a new panel to supervise stealing elections for the Trump administration, populated by some of the worst thugs and thieves in the history of American electoral politics. And we're joined with by Bob Kohler, a great Common Wonders columnist, to put out a beautiful piece about this ridiculous election theft panel, and which went all over the internet. We're going to be joined by John Simon, author of Code Red, and Garland. Garland, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Harvey. Thank you for having me on.
Garland is in Georgia, talking to us about this very, very important, most recent stolen election in Georgia, which nobody is talking about. As usual, Democratic Party just rolled over, let the Republicans steal it. John Ossoff, the Democratic candidate, the legitimate winner, said not a word. And we need to dissect this. John and Garland. Garland, you have to leave. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Harvey. Could you repeat that?
You emailed me that you have to leave early, so we're going to start with Georgia. Bob Kohler, are you on the line?
Oh, yeah. I'm good for most of the hour, just up to the last couple minutes.
Okay. So, Bob Kohler, are you on the line with us?
I am here, yes. Hi, Harvey.
And you are in Chicago.
Yeah.
And you're on from that beautiful column you wrote, along with so much else you've written over the years. And John Simon, you with us?
I am. Hi, Harvey. Hi, Bob. Hi, Garland.
Hi, John.
I'm representing the West
Hey, John.
Coast today.
And where are you, John?
Looking out over the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Oh, poor you.
California.
Okay, so we're spanning the continent here from Georgia to Ohio, where I am, to Chicago, where Bob is, to the Wild Wild West. So
wow.
We're going to start today big, and then I'm going to go back in and focus on Georgia, and then we're going to come back to this panel and the general topic of stolen elections. Bob Kohler, do you want to give us a basic rundown and overview of this new panel that Donald Trump has put in power?
Well, yeah, it's just complete insanity or inanity, really. It's a newly created by Trump, and it's called the Commission on Election Integrity. But it's, you know, known as the Voter Fraud Panel. Now, there, and of course, we know from the famous Trump quote after the election, millions of illegals voted. And, of course, they all voted for Hillary, and that's why she won by 3 million votes. And had the illegals not voted, Trump would have won the popular vote as well as the Electoral College vote, according to Trump. And he has gone, you know, to create this panel, you know, headed where, well, the vice chairman of the panel is Kris Kobach, who is the Secretary of State of the state of Kansas, who has developed a program called Cross Check, which The reporter Greg Palast has done a lot of investigation of cross-check that basically is, you know, looking for name matches, you know, from state to state. And there are a lot of name matches, and, you know, and there's no depth to this checking of, you know, of people with the same names. It's just a simple excuse to start taking names off the list, getting rid of people, getting rid of people's eligibility to vote, and often the names are Hispanic or maybe a name that is likely to be African American, and it's creating, it's inventing a problem of voter fraud. I mean, there's like, a few incidents of voter fraud of actually, you know, proven voter fraud over, you know, decades of elections. I mean, just a very, very few. It's nothing in terms of a problem for democracy. But, of course, the other side of it is the vote suppression and people not being allowed to vote is an enormous problem for democracy, you know, such as it is in this country.
Well, that's a very well put, Bob Kohler, and we're going to continue with that. John Simon, what have you got to say about this this panel that Trump has put up here?
Yeah, I mean, Bob is right on the money. The cover in many ways is this idea of finding these illegal voters. So a lot of people who are attacking the commission are talking about Trump's ego and the idea that, you know, he still wants to have won the popular vote, and that's really what this commission is about. And that, you know, that may be part of it, but really what's going on underneath here is it's just this enormous data grab, which they've attempted to do and they will continue to do in many ways to sort of highlight this idea that they, you know, that they need all this data in order to secure American elections and secure the integrity. So it's a, you know, it's a solution in search of a problem, but they're sort of establishing this meme, this idea that they have to have voters, voting history and social security and everything. Well, that data is incredibly politically useful, and it is no coincidence that they need something now that's incredibly politically useful, because it's very obvious from a strictly partisan standpoint that when you govern the way they're governing and you're stuck with a lead balloon like Trump, who you've, you know, backed and supported to the point where you're going to go down with the ship, they are going to need to manipulate the American electorate in ways that they have never been able to do up till now. As much as they have been able to do, they're going to need to do more. And that requires more data, more deeper cuts of, you know, suppression, harsher suppression, and also electronic manipulation. And having all this voter data comes in very handy when you're also trying to not only suppress the vote or strip the electorate, but also flip the vote. And so this is way more dangerous than even people who are onto it realize. And it's a huge grab. It has there's a lot of chutzpah there, they're setting it up to get that one way or another, get their hands on that data or establish the fact that they have this need for that data, making the states look bad, putting out the idea that, you must have something to hide. This is pretty strategic stuff, and it's incredibly dangerous.
Well, it really is a coup d'etat. I mean, it's the, it's the end of the electoral system in the United States. Garland, do you want to jump in with us?
I just want to add one thing to what Bob and John are saying here locally in the 6th District in Georgia. So what's interesting about this is Secretary Kemp is a Republican, and he has, if you know the Republican platform, is very concerned about state rights and reduced federal government power. Yet Secretary Kemp here has already agreed to give up the Georgia voting data, just as John is saying, and turn that over to a federal, the federal government, which is exactly the opposite of what he and most Republicans run on. the argument.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing how much Republicans love states' rights when it comes to environmental regulation and other things like that. But when states legalize marijuana or want to maintain some kind of election integrity, then they go after. I want to add to that, by the way, the New York Times has run an interesting piece how red states, where state governments are controlled by Republicans, they're going in and crushing cities and towns that pass more progressive legislation, like Columbus, Ohio, tried to ban fracking, and the state is going to oppose it, and that's going on all over the country. Bob Kohler, do you want to add more on this panel? We're going to come back to it at the end of the show.
Yeah, well, this is all, it's all just, you know, fascinating and excruciating. I found it, the interesting thing, I was, you know, listening to Jonathan talk about the political usefulness of this data grab. The more they know about who you vote for, the more they can begin to find ways to keep you from voting if you vote in the wrong ways. I mean, there seems to be more and more evidence that as the Republicans sink into a minority party, it becomes more and more difficult, you know, for them to, you know, to maintain any kind of power. And the only way to maintain it is to, but of course this has been it's been that way since the beginning of the country. I mean, African Americans cannot vote. I mean, you know, could not vote for the longest time. And then even when they were freed, there was still another 100 years of Jim Crow that was effectively keeping them from voting. And so it's just regrouping, reforming in different ways. And, there was a study that I was looking at from University of California, San Diego, that looked at a lot of stuff related to things like voter ID laws that are not... the lack of a state-issued photo ID, is not an even, distributed lack across the country. It's focused on, concentrated on a minority and poor communities requiring that has an enormously large impact on the very population that the Republicans need to, to keep from voting in any kind of large number. So, well, the votes from, these communities just trickle in, and their votes, stay, completely, messed with and come in strongly. So, it's just a fascinating, scary situation.
Well, you wrote in your column about Greg Palast's film and book about CrossCheck, which is the computer program pioneered by Chris Kobach, which is very clearly designed to disenfranchise as many black people, as many Hispanics, as many Asian Americans, as many Muslims, as many college students, and other suspected non-millionaire Democrats from the voter rolls.
Right,
and
exactly.
That's the function of CrossCheck. Now, they're using this commission, which is headed by Chris Kobach, who has introduced the country to CrossCheck. I understand it was in about 30 states in 2016. And so with the federal empowerment of this commission, Trump has raised the level of systemic Jim Crow disenfranchisement through a national computer program. John Simon, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, please. I want to add to the context here. And, I think for at least 15 years, I've been warning about what I call a catch-22. That once you get in power, you're able to use the levers of power to stay in power, even if those levers are anti-democratic or, you know, involve all sorts of schemes and stunts like this. So you become very empowered, and it becomes very, very difficult to resist these kind of measures. And, you know, the context is truly Alice in Wonderland. And I have to say, I mean, we're at a time now when, you know, it's been acknowledged that the Russians targeted whatever it was, 39 state voter databases. It's been acknowledged by the Department of Homeland Security, no less, that not only the Russians, but unlisted, unidentified domestic operatives were also after this information, which is really is targeted because it enables the manipulation of votes, the altering of votes, and vote counts. And yet, you know, you have a blanket statement from the Department of Homeland Security that there is no evidence that actual votes have been affected in the November election. And when you just parse that a little bit and you go a little farther, you find a very, very quiet acknowledgement that no evidence of actual votes being affected has been found because they haven't looked for any. Because yeah. Not a single machine, not a single memory card, not a single string of code, not a single voter mark paper ballot used in November, used to give us President Trump and the Republican Senate and all these other elections, not a single one of them has been examined or inspected by the Department of Homeland Security. So that provides some sort of weird, sick contrast for context for what we're seeing now. You have this election, quote, integrity, and that word is obscene when used in this context, yeah. Commission that is going after this non-existent voter fraud and using it as a cover for all this data grab. And then you have an absolute blank refusal, a you can't handle the truth refusal. I think I referred to it as Colonel Nathan Jessup meets Inspector Jacques Clouseau. You can't handle the truth, and we are not going to look for it, and we're not going to inspect anything. Attitude on the part of the federal government, not just now, but when it was under Obama's control, under the Obama administration, and the media, the New York Times. I've been in contact with a reporter. I've been in contact with the executive editor. The comment I had, the response I had from them about Georgia 6th, forget about November. I mean, that is way under the bridge at this point. But Georgia 6th, the Ossoff election, there's nothing there for us to write about. Nothing. Oh, you know, you present all evidence, right. You do all this. So an absolute refusal to look right into the sun where all the light is coming from, and yet, you know, you're going to pull out this flashlight and look where there's absolutely nothing, where there's been study and study and research, and there's been nothing. And the people who are doing it are, as I think, you know, Bob stated, I mean, the most the suspect of them all. I mean, people like Ken Blackwell and Chris Kobach and Hans von Spakovsky, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, people who have been at the epicenter of election theft and defending the non-transparency of the American electoral system. So the whole thing is just one big bundle of Alice in Wonderland bullshit. And, you know, you got to look at it in that context.
We got, by the way, we are broadcast by some stations that I do not, I can't use swear words like that, so we'll have to
edit those out.
That
way I hope they beep it out, then. I apologize
I got an email from Victoria here in Columbus to not allow those words because they have a different kind of license. We can say anything we want on PRN.
Fair enough.
But the other ones that pick it up, we can't use. So, Garland, yes.
Yeah, I wanted a quick add to what John is saying, just to bring it back down to the 6th District again. So we know, you know, we're talking about there's nothing to write about, but we now know that Merle King of the Center for Election System had that system left open, and I'm talking about the actual voting files and voting database. That was left wide open for months after he was informed by a security expert of the vulnerability. And then when at the second time, the second security expert found it again, he was originally notified in August 28th of 2016. In March, he was notified again. They actually circumvented the whole Center for Election System and went to the Kennesaw State Security Office. And when the security office got involved, they then put up a firewall and contacted the governor about the fact that the Center for Election System's voting files, now these are not the voting database, this is the actual files that are used to program the memory cards and the voter access cards for every election. And the database was all wide open for any actor anywhere in the world to have hacked. And that's something that the news media says that there's nothing to write about. That's crazy.
Yes.
You know, and we're having trouble with that coverage. You know, that's a national story, but it's not getting out.
Well, let's do another round robin here, and then we'll get deeper into the Georgia 6. You're calling us from Georgia, Garland, and we appreciate that. John has mentioned that this election commission is an all-star cast. You know, the Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, and Ted Williams of election theft here. You got Chris Kobach from Kansas, who pioneered the cross-check program for about 30 states in 2016. You have Ken Blackwell, who outright stole the presidential election in Ohio in 2004. And then you got Hans von Spaskowski, or whatever his name is, who is just this shady underworld character, turns up. And, you know, they put the three most efficient and infamous election thieves on the election integrity program here. And we cannot get a rise whatsoever from the corporate media or from the Democratic Party, for God's sakes, to deal with this issue. And I got to tell you, and I'm going to say this flat out, that the three people most responsible for putting Donald Trump in the White House are Al Gore, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton, who, you know, legitimately, the Democratic Party has won every presidential election since 1992. But, you know, in 2000, it was stolen. Al Gore said nothing. In 2004, it was stolen. John Kerry said nothing. And now in 2016, Hillary Clinton has said nothing. And
she said it's the Russians.
What's that?
Yeah, she said it's the Russians.
Yeah, the Russians. So I have no doubt that the Russians could, and at least the one thing that's happened with this Russian controversy, since it's been deflected over to Putin, and you know, in the long run, I think we're going to have to recognize that Donald Trump is nothing but a bagman for the Russian mafia. I mean, I think that's why he won't release his tax returns. Frankly, it's all in rubles. But, you know, the bottom line here is that at least the debate on the Russians has made it clear that the American elections can be hacked. You know, they want to blame it on the Russians. Go right ahead. But what they've done is acknowledged that they could have done it. Now it's our job to finally turn these idiots into understanding that the real culprits are the secretaries of state and the people who run the election boards. We saw it in 2000 in Florida. We saw it in Ohio 2004. We saw it all over the country this year in 2016. And I don't know how we get a rise out of the Democratic Party. You know, Bob Petraeus and I, whose our most recent book is The Strip and Flip Disaster of of America's Stolen Elections, we've documented election theft, you know, way back to, as Bob mentioned, to the founding of the Republic. But the bottom line is, at this point in time, the Democratic Party
seems more than happy just to sit back and let Trump consolidate his control over the electoral process. I mean, anybody that thinks that the Democratic Party has a chance in heck of retaking the Congress in 2018 or the presidency in 2020, they're not paying attention. Bob Kohler, what do you got to say about that?
Yeah, okay, well, that's, I mean, this is all very, very hard to, you know, to process and come to grips with. As a member of the media myself, I do place, you know, almost all, I mean, much of the blame on the media, the corporate media, for not standing up to this, for not looking at this in any real way. Now, I mean, it's interesting your point that at least with, you know, the chance to blame it on the Russians, they're opening the door for the possibility of elections being hacked. Because I had not thought about it that way. I have mostly just you know, kind of squirmed in frustration every time the Russians come up on the news, and you know, and whatever it is they did, whether it's anything or nothing, I mean, the need to turn this into a Cold War game as opposed to looking internally at the, you know, the problems with this country are beyond credibility for me as a member of the media. You know, why this cannot be looked at and discussed, you know, in a very, you know, precise and clear way. There is some. I mean, the more I get involved in this, you know, the more years I'm involved in the idea of, you know, elections not being safe, secure, and, you know, and real, you know, the more I feel like we're living in a pretend democracy. It's always been a pretend democracy. Democracy, there's nothing more inconvenient for people in power than to be subject to, you know, a democracy just knocking them out of power for not doing what their constituents want, or for what, you know, helping to create the kind of country or world that the majority of people want. The propaganda of democracy, you know, creates this country, this country that we believe in. You know, I mean, we just got, you know, through the 4th of July, this great, the greatest country, the greatest democracy on earth. And it's so frustrating to know how much of this, how little, you know, it really is a democracy, and how much it is a the facade of democracy, and the results are, if not predetermined, they're totally squeezed into minute choices between, you know, one part of the power structure or another part of the power structure, but nothing outside of the power structure. I mean, you know, and once again, to just stay on the issue of the media, The idea of, you know, what is debated during an election, a presidential or otherwise, it's always really minor stuff. In all the elections, the wars that we have been involved in for the last, you know, almost two decades do not come up as part of, you know, what's debated or discussed. And, you know, the media is sort of the bully, the bouncer that keeps impertinent questions out of the debate and out of the context. So that's not what the election is about. So people, you know, lots of people can't vote, and the issues that we're voting on are so minor and small compared to the issues that really exist. I don't have an answer to what to do about it.
Well, I want to point out one thing, and then John Simon, you'll jump in. Not only does the media, the corporate media,
has been unwilling to discuss this issue of election theft, this reality of election theft, but even the so-called progressive media. I mean, Bob Fitrakis and I, who've written God knows how many articles and six or seven books on this, have been continually attacked by The Nation, the Mother Jones. We were blacklisted from Daily Coast for suggesting that there might be a problem when Mitt Romney had a direct financial interest in the voting machines in Cincinnati. So, you know, it's just a totally you can't handle the truth situation. John Simon?
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who's listening, I mean, this is the life we live, is with this rage. I mean, Bob, as a member of the media, you know, comes back to this periodically in a sort of, you know, episodic way, the way a journalist would. Those of us who are election integrity, you know, advocates and activists basically live this every day. And it begin, you know, it's interesting to hear, Bob, because you hear the outrage afresh. We get so used to it. In so many ways, this is just the world that we live in, and it is absurd, and it is you can't handle the truth, and it is Alice in Wonderland, and yet this is what we, these are the kind of parameters that, under which we operate basically every day for years and years. Just staying sane is its own challenge. A big part of the answer, there's all this hand-wringing at this point about how can we make our election secure and what do we have to encrypt and what do we have to, you know, have different new computers with new memory cards with different locks on them and all this kind of stuff under this, what has, again, under this false assumption that the danger, the principal danger here is from Russia. Or North Korea, or some other hacker coming from the outside, and you will not see a line, a letter, a word or a letter devoted to the far greater, obvious, rationally far greater danger, which is insiders, those who program and maintain and distribute and have access to the memory cards, to the code that runs on these machines, people that work for Dominion, people that work for ESNS, people that work for Command Central or Triad in your area, that, you know, these are technicians, these are executives, these are middle managers, these are whoever. When a memory card comes across your bench, the power that you have to determine political fates is extraordinary under this current system where there is no transparency. And that power can be used and it can be sold. And so if I want to, let's say, knock out Russ Feingold, I'm going to go to somebody from Command Central and offer them a certain relatively small sum of money compared to the dollars that it costs to actually run a campaign and buy votes, buy advertisements, and just say, make it happen. Just alter the zero counters on those memory cards. Do whatever you have to do. I don't want to know. Just, this is the result I want. These are insiders. And so we're looking at the electoral house, call it the electoral house, like a home that has windows and doors. And everybody right now is all exercised about, you know, have the windows, is there signs of forced entry? Have they been broken into? Are the burglar alarms secure? And absolutely determined to ignore the people with keys to the front door, sitting around the kitchen table drinking a beer. And so, you know, this in and of itself is so ridiculous and so irrational. The way to secure the system is not to secure it against one vector, the hackers out there in Russia, which is what they're, if anything, contemplating now. You have to secure it against everyone who has a hand in the programming of these memory cards and these machines. And you know what we really need is we have to go to a place where we put the computers away and put these programmers away and go back, as inconvenient and as Luddite and as ridiculous as it is. The Dutch just did it. The Germans did it. The Irish did it. They get it. Go back to public observable counting by hand for our elections, because obviously, it means a great deal. The stakes are undeniable. This is more important than who wins the Super Bowl or who wins the Tour de France.
This is the future of the planet. And it's a very simple solution from a technical standpoint. Yeah, we have to invest a little bit of elbow grease, a little labor power. Yeah, we might have to spend a little bit of money, you know, a gazillionth of what we spent bringing democracy, quote-unquote, to Iran and to Iraq and Afghanistan. We don't really deserve a democracy unless we're willing to work a little for it. And that's what has
right.
taken over the modern age. Convenience,
right.
ease, speed, entertainment, that's what it's all about. That's what the media
right.
thrives on, and that's what they've sold us. And that's what
so
we
what
have
we
to wake up from, that dream.
Absolutely. Well stated, John Simon. Your book, Code Red, does a good job of dealing with that. I want to switch now. You know, you've raised the issue of hand-counted paper ballots. That's where we need to go. Local people counting can hack hand-counted paper ballots. But, you know, it is the best, as Winston Churchill said about democracy, it's the worst system we have except for all the other ones. And we have to protect the voter rolls as well, the registration rolls, make sure they're not stripped by all these Jim Crow secretaries of state. So, and that's the solution that we're arguing for. And Holland, Ireland, Romania, Germany, Japan, Canada, that I know of, all have, Switzerland, all have hand-counted paper ballots, and that's where we have to go in this country. I believe we also have them in Minnesota, and there are a number of towns around the country that also, I know Wendell, Massachusetts has hand-counted paper ballots, but that's where we need to go. I have to say that in my world, electronic voting machines are to democracy what nuclear power is to the planet. We won't go there any further, but I'm going to leave that on the table. So now let's go directly. Garland, you are in talking to us from the 6th District in Atlanta. We just had this sham of an election, C-election, in Georgia. There's a ton of stuff out there which you have participated in saying this election was stolen. So can you tell us how it was done?
Well, first of all, let me. I just wanted to back up for a second. I wanted to add one point because I think that John and Bob just really hit on something really, really important, and that was the fact that there's way too much focus on Russia, and is exactly what John and Bob said. The focus has to be internally, who can hack these systems and what security procedures have to be in place, so on and so on. And in some ways, some of the election integrity activists kind of shoot ourselves in the foot when we keep focusing and allowing the media to focus on Russia and not focus on the internal problems that we're having. So that's what we are doing here in Georgia, is we're trying to keep the focus exactly like what John and Bob have said on the internal problems and what has gone down. We haven't officially said that the election is stolen. However, John and election activity activists around the country are looking at these numbers, and they defy logic. If you'd like to walk through some of the examples, I'd be glad to do that.
All right, let's do it. But we got 15 minutes or so to go, so let's do it.
Okay, so just quickly to give you some examples, and then we can get into how it could have possibly been done. But we know that Karen Handel was declared the winner by 51.78% to 48.22%. That's the exact margin. But when we looked at the verifiable mail-in ballots, John Ossoff had won by a 64-36% margin. He also won the verifiable provisional ballots by a 73-27% margin. And that's quite a sampling. That's over 11% of the vote between those two things. So that's a huge sample, and typically a random audit would only be 5%. So it's more than double. If you consider the early voting, he won that 51-49%. And in spite of the fact that he got 10% less votes percentage-wise than when he ran on April 18th against 17 opponents. So think about that for a minute. You're running against 17 opponents a month or two earlier. Now you're down to one, but your vote percentage doesn't even go up a tenth of a point, and you're only running against one opponent, and we had 17 before. That doesn't make sense. And then when we went down to the precinct level, and we're still analyzing this, but we found that 40 precincts have a 60-point total swing between the mail-in and the election day ballot. So let's think about that for a second. When I say a 60-point total swing, a typical example would be that Ossoff would win the mail-in vote, the verifiable mail-in vote, by 65 to 35% margin. And then Handel would be declared the winner of the election day vote by the same margin, 65 to 35%, in that one precinct. So that's extremely unusual that you would have that kind of difference within a precinct. It just doesn't really make sense that two-thirds of the voters would vote for Ossoff in mail-in, and then two-thirds would vote for Handel in election day voting, even though it's in that same one little precinct. If you went down to a 40-point total, that number would go up for precincts to over 100. If you went down to 20-point total swing, it would go up probably to about 150 of the 200 and so precincts. Only 8 precincts flopped the other way. Only 8 of the 209, and 3 of those were split precincts, which are split across the district, so they only had a few voters. So what we have here that by numbers is we have about 200 precincts that are swinging towards Handel on Election Day by dramatic margins, and we only have 5 that swing towards Ossoff on the other way. So those are some of the statistics, and we're still analyzing this, but those are some of the statistics that have raised a lot of questions, Harvey, about this election nationally. And we're getting great support and great help from people like John at analyzing the data. So I'm really grateful for everything John Simon's done for this.
John Simon, I know you've looked a lot at this election. What do you want to add here? This is the...
The one thing that I might have missed it, but that Garland didn't say it, I mean, you know, is that the mail-in vote and the provisional vote is on paper, and it is countable and recountable by humans. So there's a record there. It leaves a trail. It leaves a record. The vote on Election Day, as well as the early in-person voting, where Ossoff did not do nearly as well. Matter of fact, was roundly defeated, and I'll get to that in a second. That is unverifiable. I mean, those are ones and zeros in cyberspace. And, short of impounding the machines and doing some sort of very, very sophisticated forensic investigation, that's never going to be subject to verification or challenge, or will never see the light of day. That's what paperless DREs are about, and that's why, you know, they've been phased out in places like Virginia and whatnot, but obviously not everywhere. They're still counting the votes, 20% of the votes or so in this country. So, I mean, we're looking at two very different methods of counting votes that are correlated with two very, very different electoral results, a win and a loss. I mean, the Election Day vote was shocking. When it's broken down, the voters on Election Day, apparently, according to these machines, for which the passwords, passcodes, passwords were left hanging, as Garland said, and there were all sorts of reasons to be red flags and reasons to be suspicious, but according to these machines, on Election Day, the voters came out and dealt Ossoff a 16-point loss, 58% to 42%, after he never trailed in a single poll, after he won the early voting in general, and certainly the verifiable early voting in the mail-in version of it. All of a sudden he loses by 16 points. I mean, to explain that, and we're always trying to look for benign explanations. And frankly, you know, most of us wish we could come up with benign explanations so we didn't have to go to bed thinking that we were really a fake democracy. You know, the benign explanation would be something happened. I mean, he was caught walking down the street with his pants down or in bed with an intern or something. Or he said, you know, goddamn America on TV, you know, public TV. Something, some form of late-breaking scandal is the only kind of thing that could account for that. And the only thing that we could in any way hang a hat on was the possibility, you know, that the shooting in D.C. at the Republican baseball practice, you know, somehow affected voters. But it didn't seem to affect the early vote in the week that happened the week before Election Day. And it was widely viewed in a very nonpartisan way. I mean, Ossoff had nothing to do with it. And, you know, to swing an electorate that strongly because there happened to be a Republican target, I mean, it's the kind of thing that is worthy of investigation. But so are the machines worthy of, I mean, if that is worthy of investigation to see whether that played a role, don't you think that these completely unverifiable, paperless machines are also worthy of impoundment and investigation to see whether that played a role? So, you know, we look at these things, and for any given election, as you well know, you can gin up benign explanations. And one of them for this was, oh, it was all about Nancy Pelosi. Well, let's reconsider. This election was not about Nancy Pelosi. It was about Donald Trump. Everybody knew that. Everybody in Georgia 6th knew that. Everybody in the country knew that. You know, and if it was about Nancy Pelosi, it would have been about Nancy Pelosi in the mail-in ballot. It would have been about Nancy Pelosi in the early voting. So all of a sudden on Election Day, when you need a 16-point victory throughout the election, there it is on machines that are programmed by partisan outfits under the control of partisan officials. You know, this is the kind of thing that just prima facie, just you have to investigate. And yet there will be, I mean, barring any sort of shocking legal victories, and I don't know how that's progressing or where you can get, but history is not encouraging on that score, as you know from dealing with the 2004 election and others. You know, apart from anything shocking on the legal front, there will be no investigation of this election in Georgia 6th, of the November election in any of the states where the recounts were thwarted. This is how we go on, tra-la, move on, next election, and this is how we wind up with fascism via fraud.
And Harvey, I just wanted to add a couple things to what John is saying there, and I can give you an update on the legal case, which is very interesting. But to add to John's point, there was nothing here. I'm in the epicenter of the 6th District. I live a couple miles from Karen Handel's house. I'm in a mile from the largest canvassing operation I've ever seen, which John Ossoff conducted. So I'm right here, so I know what's happening on the ground. And as John has already pointed out, there was no significant event that would have justified that kind of a turnaround on Election Day. Everything proceeded as normal. And in fact, if anything, John Ossoff's canvassing team increased dramatically in the last week. He has an office about a mile down the road from where I live, and they had a dozen vans there with people loaded from all over the country going out day after day in the last week or two. So if anything, I would have expected his total to go up on Election Day, not down. So John is absolutely right. Nothing happened. You know, he would have had to have been charged with a crime or something to justify those kinds of percentage drops. But that said, I can give you an update on the case, which I think you'll find very interesting for the audience. As Bob and John have already explained, Georgia's voting system, one of the worst in the country, statewide, the voters can't verify the ballots, the election officials can't audit it, and the candidates can't have a recount. They only reprint previous unverifiable results. So there's three very strong factors in this lawsuit that could result in an overturn of the election. The first one is that the county election boards were petitioned for a recanvass of the votes which is a process that the counties go through to try to verify that their procedures and their results are correct. Each of the state election boards denied those requests, just ignored them, in direct violation of Georgia's state election board regulations. So that is one ground for the challenge. The second ground is that Secretary Kemp failed to properly certify this system. The last system certification is in 2008. It wasn't a complete certification. The system has been patched a couple of times. It's never been totally recertified. There's only a point release of a Windows CE upgrade that was certified. So, and that was only in the case of fixing a bug, not in a total check, as John and Bob have pointed out, of everything, you know, infrastructure and everything working correctly. That's number two. Number three, we already talked about earlier. I mentioned that Merle King leaving the barn door open at the Center for Election Systems, which actually programs the database and the cards. Both the voter access cards are programmed based on data gotten from Center CES, as well as the memory cards, and those touch every single machine. So that was wide open. So the argument that the lawsuit is making, which is a very effective argument, they're saying that we have a deficient system. It was further compromised by misconduct that I just stated on those three, in those three cases, exposure to hacking, lack of certification, and a refusal to re-canvass. Therefore, the results of this election are in doubt, and by law, which is OCGA 212522, by law, if misconduct causes an election to be in doubt, that election must be thrown out. And therefore, the state of Georgia is going to have to prove that there was no doubt about the results, and I don't think they're going to be able to prove that.
Wow. Well, of course, there's no support in your – is there any support in your pursuit of this case from the Democratic Party or from John Ossoff?
Absolutely not, Harvey, and that's the fascinating point of this whole thing, as I think Bob has already pointed out beautifully. The Democrats are just laying back and not saying a word, even though it appears at this time that they may have well been cheated out of an election, and independent people such as Voter GA and myself, others have coming up and are standing up for their right on this particular election, and they themselves are too cowardly to come forward and even say a word.
It's astounding to me, absolutely astounding that that's the case. We are actually almost out of time. This has flown by. Bob Kohler, and then John, and identify yourselves, please, and then we'll finish up.
Okay, yeah, this is Bob. This is absolutely astounding stuff. I'm learning a lot just as listening this afternoon. To me, there's several things standing out. You know, once again, as a member of the media, you know, crying, with frustration that the media does not take on this issue, but. The word that stands out for me that is crucial is the word integrity. Nothing can possibly happen unless integrity actually has a place in the process. I mean, real, honest, God-given integrity, this belief in doing the right thing, whether it is convenient to your interests or not, let the person who is chosen by the actual majority, have win the election rather than try to game the election to make sure the election goes your way.
Of course, that's why Trump has called his commission the Election Integrity Commission.
I know,
which is
the problem with, words can then be poisoned.
Right.
And so for that commission, which is the opposite of what's necessary to then steal the word integrity, also makes me cringe.
Yes, Bob, your website is commonwonders.org, is that correct?
.com.
.com, commonwonders.com. And what's your most recent book?
courage grows strong at the wound, which is,
okay.
You know, a look at the inner and outer dimensions of peace. And
okay. It's a wonderful book. I've read it. It's, you're a great, great writer. Well, hopefully we'll get time to come back to you. I want to let John and Gilbert identify themselves. John Simon, you are author of Code Red. How do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's Code Red, Computerized Election Theft, and the New American Century. And I'm working on an updated election 2018 edition. The guys, they keep you busy with new stuff all the time. The website is www.codered2016.com. And I have a blog there, and I have articles there and all sorts of stuff. You know, when I say they keep you busy, it does sound like a sort of running drama, you know, fit for a blog. But in a way, it's all of a piece. And I think part of it is that, you know, we think we're playing. We grew up in a time in this country when
John,
we were kind
John,
of lulled.
Let me interrupt you. John, I got to interrupt you one thing. John.
Called Democracy on a board of democracy with democracy pieces. And we're really playing a game of power. And those who are playing that game from the inside know that. And they're acting exactly the way we would anticipate they would act in a game of power. And so this really is a battle between democracy and totalitarianism, democracy and just old-fashioned power and control. It hasn't yet been perceived as that, but the Trump administration is waking a lot of people up to that possibility. So that needs to be, resistance isn't enough. It's got to be resistance plus the translation of that resistance into electoral results. That means insisting on an electoral system that is transparent, that can be verified, that is public and observable. And the only way we're going to get there is by exercising public, mass public insistence, which means in many cases economic muscle. We have more power than we think we have as consumers, as workers, as taxpayers, and it really has come to that throw. And we're seeing that now in the Trump administration. So as dismayed as we are, it is also a wake-up call and an opportunity to get out there, become informed, start acting, start organizing, and start demanding justice.
Very good. Thank you, John.
Integrity.
Thank you, John Simon. Gilbert, in Atlanta, you have the last word.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Sir Harvey. Just to get a hold of us, we're at VoterGA. Voters Organized for Trusted Election Results in Georgia. That's voterga.org. That's our website. There's all sorts of information up there in the news tab, the press release tab. We have 18 bulletins about the Georgia 6th race dating back to April. That's one way to find us. You can also find us on Facebook if you join VoterGA. And you can find us on Twitter if you it's Garland at VoterGA. So if you want to get any more information about what's going on the Georgia 6, we are nationally recognized as the leading information house on the Georgia 6
right.
election.
Thank you, Garland. Thank you, guys. John, Bob, Rachel, we'll see you next week.
Thank you all.
Solartopian Democracy.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.